regardless of who the U.S. president is next year, I'd expect to see this new ICBM tested.
New North Korean missile studied. It's Monday, October 19th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Pakistani female journalists find hostility online. Dueling presidential town halls. Political ads aim to sway voters. What's next for the Supreme Court? A pandemic food shortage. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Analysts say North Korea's newly unveiled intercontinental ballistic missile appears designed to overwhelm U.S. missile defenses. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports, that means it is getting harder and more expensive to defend against North Korea's growing missile force, according to experts.
North Korea's biggest ICBM yet, unveiled at this nighttime military parade. The missile can almost certainly reach the United States, but its range isn't the biggest concern. North Korea has already shown it can launch missiles capable of hitting the U.S. mainland. Now, analysts say, it wants to show it can fit multiple nuclear warheads on a single ICBM. For U.S. missile defense systems shown here, multiple warheads would be much more difficult to intercept, says analyst Melissa Hannum.
If you have multiple warheads coming out of that single missile, you now have to have multiple interceptors for each incoming warhead.
If the U.S. felt it needed to continually add interceptors, that would be expensive, much more expensive than what it would cost North Korea to build more missiles.
The challenge with missile defense is that it's always cheaper and easier to make a new missile than it is to make the vast missile defense system, which involves sensors to detect, involves multiple interceptors for each single missile.
The North Korean ICBM does have drawbacks, however. With 22 wheels, its launcher vehicle is so large, it may not be very mobile. And it would take a long time to set up and fuel. It is also untested, but that could soon change, says analyst Bruce Klingner.
What I would expect is to see that ICBM tested next year. What North Korea tends to do is something very provocative in the first year of a new U.S. or South Korean administration. So regardless of who the U.S. president is next year, I'd expect to see this new ICBM tested.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un may be reluctant to conduct a major test before the November 3rd U.S. election. But earlier this year, Kim said he no longer feels bound by his self-imposed moratorium on nuclear and long-range missile tests. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
You'll find so much more on this story and all the others you hear on today's program by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. You'll also find us on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, and YouTube. And, of course, you can find us on our website. That's voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. New Zealand's Jacinda Ardern wins second term by landslide. Killer tropical storms in Vietnam seen as eerily routine. Chest-high floodwaters force Phnom Penh evacuations. Taiwan should prepare against possible Chinese invasion, according to a White House official. China defends Confucius Institutes, now under fire from United States. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories, and there's much more, at Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Female journalists in Pakistan are demanding an end to online harassment, including threats of sexual assault that they face for their work. After several journalists posted a petition on social media calling for action, the government proposed a new law to curb the harassment. But some journalists have warned that such legislation could be used to limit speech. Gady Ara Anis reports for VOA from Islamabad.
Muniza Jahangir, a renowned broadcast journalist in Pakistan, is one of the 15 original signatories of the petition against online harassment. The hostility often comes from social media users who support or are affiliated with one of Pakistan's political parties. Jahangir told VOA that the harassment of female journalists goes beyond simple differences of opinion.
We have all been subjected to professional criticism, but these are personal attacks on female journalists. These attacks are sexist in nature. They involve the threats of sexual assaults and rapes. This was the point when we thought, no, they have crossed the red line and we have to take action.
Since August, the number of complainants has increased from 15 journalists to 150. Pakistan's Parliamentary Secretary of Human Rights, Lal Chand Malhi, says a new law is needed to stop the harassment.
The ministry has drafted Protection of Journalists Bill 2020. Cabinet has approved it and now it is with the Ministry of Information and Broadcast for their input. We intend to table it in Parliament soon. Political parties need to be brought into a framework so they are bound to abide by certain rules.
Most women journalists do not favor a new law and rejected the idea in a recent statement.
This government and even the previous governments always tried to regulate social media. One reason could be the kind of freedom the medium gives to you. Many issues that could not be raised on regular media are easily discussed on social forums. But what happened with the 2016 Prevention of Electronic Crimes Bill was justified as a means to protect women online. We all know how it is misused.
Sadaf Khan, who heads the group Media Matters for Democracy, played a major role in drafting the complaint. She says online harassment has less to do with the laws and more to do with political culture.
Our first demand is that political parties should consolidate a code of ethics for their social media cells, their supporters. The parties should openly condemn and stop this online abusive culture of threats and harassment. They should convey to their support base that this behavior is not acceptable and penalize the offender. Second, the Federal Investigation Agency should play an active role in lodging complaints against people, especially those who are powerful or in government. We demand a fair treatment of our cases.
The Human Rights Parliamentary Secretary believes that the new law will be a huge help in persuading political parties to play a positive role in bringing about a cultural change. A survey by Media Matters for Democracy found that 77% of female journalists in Pakistan resort to self-censorship to avoid online harassment. Journalists believe that no law will sensitize the general public. They say only the political parties can do that by sending a strong message to party workers to stop unethical activities or face penalties. Geeti Aranis for VOA News, Islamabad.
Happening now in Asia, thousands of protesters were in the streets of Bangkok, Thailand again Saturday in defiance of a government crackdown as they continue to push for the ouster of Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha. Unlike Friday's protests, when police used water cannons to disperse thousands of protesters that included children, Saturday's demonstrations were peaceful. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're starting out a brand new week, and we're so glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump and Democratic challenger Joe Biden held competing town halls at the end of last week to reach out to voters in separate forums at the same time. Mike O'Sullivan has more on the televised events just weeks before the election, November 3rd.
It should have been a head-to-head debate, but after Trump announced October 2nd he had contracted COVID-19, organizers made the event virtual, and Trump refused to participate. Instead, there were rival town halls in the battleground states of Pennsylvania and Florida, Trump trailing in the polls and trying to make up for lost time. The event was broadcast by NBC News.
I was in North Carolina today and did a big rally with tremendous turnout, and I just feel really good. Florida, Pennsylvania, we're all over the place.
Trump defended his response to COVID-19, blocking flights from China in late January. that response gets a failing grade, said Biden, who appeared in a town hall moderated by George Stephanopoulos of ABC News.
There's a presidential responsibility to lead. And he didn't do that. He didn't talk about what needed to be done because he kept worrying, in my view, about the stock market.
Biden said Trump should have pressed state governors and mayors to enforce restrictions he says could have saved more lives. Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, is in Senate confirmation hearings this week, and if confirmed, could help decide a contested election.
It would be totally up to her. I would think that she would be able to rule either for me or against me. I don't see any conflict whatsoever.
Biden won't rule out expanding the high court to change the balance.
Well, I'm not a fan. I then say it depends on how this turns out.
The candidates agree on one thing.
We have an election coming up. I think it's the most important election in the history of our country.
Biden promised to work with Republicans if elected.
Because there's so many things we really do agree on.
But much separates the parties. Early voting has started in many states, and Trump warns of widespread fraud. Most election experts say that has not happened. Trump was asked if he will accept the results of the election.
And the answer is yes, I will. But I want it to be an honest election, and so does everybody else.
The candidates are scheduled to meet 1 week from now in a final face-to-face debate. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. The Japanese government has decided to release radioactive water into the sea from the damaged Fukushima nuclear plant. Japanese media reports that a formal announcement is expected later this month. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, presidential campaign ads on television and social media are targeting voters with different messages designed for different media platforms. VOA's Steve Reddish explains the messaging campaign.
They said it couldn't be done, but President Trump did it.
Whether it is President Donald Trump,
I will not abandon you. We're all in this together.
Or former Vice President Joe Biden, campaign advertising is all over television and social media feeds.
The television advertising campaigns are generally persuasion campaigns. They're just trying to change hearts and minds.
Jennifer Strummer-Galley is a professor in the School of Information Studies at Syracuse University. She heads a project that examines presidential campaign advertising on Facebook and Instagram.
Campaigns use social media ads to raise money, to find voters, and also to get better a better picture of who their supporters likely are and what their supporters get excited to hear.
Strummer-Galley says the campaigns produce many different social media advertisements to see what sticks with voters.
And so they'll run hundreds of variants of an ad to see what message really speaks to voters, and the one that gets engagement, that is clicks back to the campaign website, those that are ones that are more likely than to run more broadly.
Once you click onto a campaign ad, the mining for personal information begins.
And the more of that information they can get from you, the better they can match that then to potentially you and their databases they already have. And if they don't yet have you, now they have you in their databases and can then start building profiles that predict whether or not you're likely to vote for them on election day and then what kinds of messages they should be sending to you on Facebook to try to get you to turn out to vote or to get more involved.
Instead of a call for action, television ad campaigns generally highlight a candidate's character, leadership, and policies.
So, for example, I've noticed the Trump's advertising on television and the idea that fracking is a major policy matter that is a differentiator between the Republicans and the Democrats. And they think that issue is resonating. So that's something they're going to advertise and hope that persuades some people to go, oh, yeah, that's an issue that I care a lot about.
Stromer Galley says President Trump's ad campaign differs from Biden's.
In his advertisements, he's more likely to talk about issues than Joe Biden is. Biden has kind of been running as the anti-Trump. And so you don't really see him talking at length or really in much too much extent about policy and issue topics in his campaign advertising.
Ads on social media cost a fraction of advertising on TV. According to the Wesleyan Media Project, Trump is outspending Biden on social media by about 22%, while Biden is outspending Trump on television by 28%. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. presidential election is just 2 weeks from tomorrow. Its results affect Asia and the entire world. Already, millions of U.S. voters have cast early ballots in response to the coronavirus pandemic and amid a very turbulent campaign season between two very different candidates. VOA Asia is keeping you up to date each day with all of the latest developments ahead of Election Day, and of course we'll share all of the results of the election from the November 3rd polls. There's also much to see and read on our social media platforms as well as our website, voanews.com.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, U.S. President Donald Trump's nominee to fill the vacancy left on the Supreme Court by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg last month, cleared the first hurdle to her confirmation. In four marathon hearing days, Barrett deflected questions on how she would rule on issues from abortion to the election to gun rights. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports on the next steps in the process.
A preview of the fight to come.
I'm not going to sit on the sidelines and watch one of our nominees be destroyed after showing respect for two Democratic nominees. That is not right.
Democrats objecting as President Donald Trump's Supreme Court nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett moves forward just a few weeks before the election.
This nomination at this moment in time is not usual, not normal, and it's beneath the dignity of this committee. We should have played by the rules.
During two marathon days of questioning, Barrett offered few insights on how she would rule on cases impacting millions of Americans.
I can't take policy positions or express my personal views before the committee because my personal views don't have anything to do with how I would decide cases.
Drawing praise from Republicans for her judicial philosophy.
You got a lifetime appointment, and if you do lawmaking, we can't vote you out of office.
And frustration from Democrats who say if Barrett is seated, she could be the deciding vote on an upcoming case that could dismantle the Affordable Care Act.
Health care coverage for millions of Americans is at stake with this nomination.
But first, the Supreme Court could be asked to rule on disputes related to millions of absentee ballots.
If she decides in the president's favor in any election-related dispute, it's going to cause grievous harm to both the court and indeed our democracy.
Polling shows a slight majority of voters think the nomination should wait until after the election on November 3rd. But as the American public has learned more about Barrett, a mother of seven and devout Catholic, support for her nomination has grown. With early voting already underway, the confirmation hearing could have an impact on voters' decisions.
There's few issues that unite Republicans, like the Supreme Court justice or the right to the restriction of abortion rights. Roe v. Wade and the conservative judges have been a huge staple for Republican platforms, including President Trump's. But on the Democratic side, especially with the vulnerability and the passing of who we just lost with Justice Ginsburg, this is an incredibly motivating factor for them as well.
Democrats acknowledge Barrett's nomination will almost certainly pass the Republican majority U.S. Senate.
I don't come out of this for the cries of defeat. You know why? Because it's motivating more people to vote. You chose to do it in the middle of election, so let's all go out there and vote.
The Senate Judiciary Committee returns next Monday to prepare Barrett's nomination for a full floor vote the week of October 26. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The coronavirus pandemic has increased poverty and hunger for many in 2020, according to the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization. And in places like Africa and Asia, conflict and climate change have made an already dire situation even worse. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports.
The UN's Food and Agricultural Organization says its efforts to fight hunger have been set back 10 years due to the coronavirus pandemic. FAO's chief economist, Maximo Torreira-Cohen, says the problem is not a lack of food, but access to it.
People won't have access to food because they are losing their jobs, because they don't have the income. Developing countries will be facing significant challenges because of recession in the world. And therefore, that is what explains why undernourishment could increase to 132 million and poverty.
He predicts poverty will get worse.
We are expecting an increase in poverty, which goes up to 150 million more people moving into extreme poverty. We are expecting up to 132 million people moving to undernourishment.
The most vulnerable, he says, are those exposed to unrest or climate change.
In sub-Saharan Africa, in the Sahel area, most of them were already facing conflict. Most of them were already facing huge shocks of climate, or they were facing locust, the problem that we have in Eastern Africa.
East Africa saw a devastating outbreak of locust swarms this year. In Kenya, it was the worst plague of the voracious insects in 70 years, taking a toll on the livelihood of millions. Although the pandemic has hit other parts of the world harder, such as in the United States and Europe, a survey by the International Committee of the Red Cross found that respondents in Africa have been affected since the start of the pandemic. ICRC's Alimatu Amadou spoke to VOA from Dakar.
And this survey was done among 2,400 people in 10 African countries. And what those people we have interviewed say is really worrying. For example, 94% have told us that the prices of the food has increased in their local markets. We also see that 82% of the people interviewed said that they lost income or revenue.
She says only 7% of the people said they had enough savings to cope with the current situation.
So in Burkina Faso, there are 2.8 million people who face crisis level of food insecurity or worse. It's actually 200% more than last year. What we see is that there are now more than 1 million people being displaced, and those people have lost access to arable land. And usually it has been made even more difficult for them to access enough food.
Beyond Africa, the FAO is particularly worried about Latin America, which has also been hit hard by COVID-19. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And you can download our full-length 25-minute programs at our website, voanews.com. We thank you for joining us today, and we thank those who helped bring this program to you, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.